A news organization called Climate Home News this week obtained and then shared a draft of a UN climate science report. The goal of the report was to assess the feasibility and likely benefits of achieving the most ambitious goal set by the Paris Climate Agreement, which is to hold total global average warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The leaked report made headlines in large part because the findings were quite sobering. But the IPCC, the UN's climate science organization, says the attention is premature because this draft could still be significantly reworked before the official release in October. Joining me now is Phil Duffy. He's president and director of the climate change think tank Woods Hole Research Center. Phil, welcome, as always.
Well, thanks for having me.
Over the past year, we've seen some federal climate reports leaked to the press, ostensibly out of fear that final drafts wouldn't be released or would be censored in some way by the administration. This is a UN report. Any idea why it's being leaked?
Well, they always are. And it's almost a stretch to say that it was leaked. I mean, it was, in fact, still is available for so-called expert review. Anyone can sign up with the IPCC as an expert and get access to the report. And when you do that, you sign something that says you won't release it. But the number of people who have it is so large that it's almost inevitable that someone will send it to some news outlet. And it happens every time.
How much weight should we give to this draft? I mean, it's February. It's not due to be released till October. And as you said, it's in the review process right now. The IPCC says, well, we could still see new data come out that would be incorporated. You know, this is not the final report.
Well, you know, the party line of the IPCC is what you just said, that, you know, this could change. And it will. Certainly the words will change. But I seriously doubt that the basic messages will change at all. And because they're not particularly new or surprising.
Well, let's talk about those messages. I mean, the point of the report was to evaluate the feasibility, in large part, of this target that was set as part of the Paris Agreement to limit total global average warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. I mean, that in some ways is kind of an arbitrary, I wouldn't say meaningless number, right? But nobody experiences the global average temperature. This is kind of just a number that we set for tracking purposes.
It's a yardstick for measuring climate change. But you're absolutely right. I mean, by itself, it has essentially no significance per se. People sometimes make a comparison between taking a temperature of the Earth and taking your own temperature. And if your temperature is elevated, that's an indication that something's wrong with the system. It's not usually a problem per se.
One of the things that was really shocking, surprising about this goal being included in the Paris Agreement is that up until that point, all of the UN climate negotiations had really been based off of a goal of limiting warming to 2 degrees Celsius.
Well, that's right. And that the 2-degree goal had been around, you know, since time immemorial. And not surprisingly, the scientific understanding matured and you know, we realized that the goal of the 2-degree goal really does subject us to a lot of risk of some really unacceptable outcomes. And so as we understood some of the science better, it became more and more clear that the stricter goal is probably more appropriate.
I mean, half a degree doesn't sound like that much. How different does the science suggest the outcomes would be?
Well, for most of the impacts, the differences are gradations. For, say, most of the impacts on agriculture, human health, again, it's gradations. But what's most worrisome is, you know, there is a point beyond which the complete melting of the Greenland ice sheet will become inevitable, and that's a threshold. And similarly for the West Antarctic ice sheet, there's also thresholds in ecosystems and so on. And so a small amount of additional warming, if you cross one or more of those thresholds, can actually make a really, really big difference. That was really, has been the driver behind focusing more on the 1.5-degree goal than the 2-degree goal, and specifically the idea of committing to a large, large amount of sea level rise. And well, there's whole entire countries whose existence is at risk.
What I think you're implying is that the science is suggesting those thresholds might sit somewhere between 1.5 and 2 degrees.
That's exactly right.
How solid is that science? How certain are we about that?
Well, I will say this. You know, the more we learn, the more it does seem like the risks of 2 degrees are really unacceptable. We don't know for sure where those thresholds are. But look, this becomes an exercise in risk management. I mean, my view is that unlike what we do in science, where we like 95% certainty or something like that before we accept an idea, if you're talking about risk management, you certainly don't need 95% confidence that some bad outcome is going to happen before you take steps to mitigate it. I mean, we all buy all kinds of insurance for health insurance, fire insurance, and so on. And we don't have 95% confidence that we're going to need that insurance, but we pay for it anyway.
So part of this report was looking at what the likely benefits would be of reaching that goal. The other, and maybe even more important part, was we're already at about 1 degree of average total global warming. Is it even possible to hit that more ambitious goal?
So look, this is the thing. I mean, I think one thing the report usefully does is it says, okay, that we need to meet this goal, we need to do three things. And one of those is simply to use less energy to do the things that we normally do. And that's one thing. And the second thing is to generate the energy that we do need without putting CO2 in the atmosphere. And the third thing is what we call CO2 removal, which actually means removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Now, to do all of those things requires a lot of technological innovation, and it requires also a lot of implementation driven by policies. I'll say this. You know, the assessment of the difficulty of doing those things, and therefore the difficulty of meeting the 1.5 degree goal, that assessment is based on economic models, essentially. They don't factor in new ideas and innovation and breakthroughs, which, if we take the steps to incentivize those, will almost certainly happen. So I think that those models tend to be overly pessimistic about the difficulty of solving this problem technologically. That said, the models do say that it's extremely difficult at this point to curtail greenhouse gas emissions rapidly enough.
The report says that if we continued on our current trajectories, we would hit 1.5 degrees, hit that goal by 2040, which gives us 12 years, basically, to avert that. What you're saying is, yes, there's technological innovation that needs to happen, but this is more a matter of throwing money at the problem.
Well, I would say it's more a matter of political will. I have immense confidence in our ability to solve technological challenges if we want to do that. I mean, we decided, in 1960 or something, we decided we wanted to go to the moon for some reason in 10 years. And we did. And as far as addressing climate change, I mean, we actually have already not all, but most of the technology that we need. What we really don't have is the policies in place that will incentivize the rapid adoption of that technology. So I would look for policies to do that, and I would look for policies that incentivize development of new solutions.
Phil Duffy is president and director of the climate change think tank Woods Hole Research Center. Phil, thanks so much.
No, thanks for having me.
Up next, the robots of the Pyeongchang Olympics. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.